Hello all sentient beings and welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, where we talk about all news, comics, and media related to the... On this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode, we review Dreamwave Transformers Generation 1 Issue 1. Diamond sees light at the end of the tunnel, and how much longer will multiplayer be available on Transformers War for Cybertron and Rise of the Dark Spark? Today is Friday, April 24th, 2020, and this is episode 178 of Transmissions Alt Mode.
Welcome to Transmissions Alt Mode, the podcast that has a dull surprise for you this week in our comic review. I'm your host Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team. Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hey, how's it going?
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hi. Let's talk Transformers.
All right. As always, we start off by thanking our Donatrions, those lovely people who give us money on Patreon and PayPal to help keep the show going. Thank you so much for your continued support. And if you would like to become a Donatrion, if you aren't already, just go to transmissionspodcast.com/support. If you'd like to buy some merchandise, you can go to our TeePublic store at transmissionspodcast.com/shop. You can also check out our friend of the show, K-Girl. She's an artist who's done a lot of work for us in the past. She has her own TeePublic.com store at teepublic.com/user/superstarK. And this week, everything at TeePublic is 35% off. So that is, I believe, ending today. It was supposed to be last week, but it got postponed. And now it's hopefully this week, and it wasn't postponed again. But yeah, you can buy everything at TeePublic for 35% off. That includes everything in our store and everything throughout the site. So if you use our link and buy something, that helps us out, but you still get the huge 35% off discount. Also, next Monday is Empire of Rust episode 22, You Get a Ship If I Get a Trip. So that's coming out just this Monday, and I hope you enjoy the continuing story of Empire of Rust. All right, let's jump into some comics news. So first up, we've got the manga for Takara Tomy's Generation Select Super Megatron. So this is now translated in from Japanese to English. So if you are curious about the backstory for the Super Megatron figure we talked about last week in the toy show, the comic is there and it's all translated in English. So you can enjoy that. These comics are, they're usually kind of fun and wacky, and they kind of, you know, tie in many iterations of the Transformers universes from the Japanese perspective. So next up, we've got a letter from Diamond, the comics distributor. This was sent out throughout the industry to a bunch of comic shops that they are planning to start shipping back up in May, so late May. And they're asking for patience as they, you know, try to get everything squared away. So for this temporary pause, it'll be about a month and a half, and then they are trying to have comic shipping back up.
It'll be interesting to see, like, what publishers have, like, exclusive deals or which ones are able to break it. Because DC was just like, nah, we're getting some new distributors, because their deal had been rumored to be up. And they're starting next week. So I would imagine the smaller publishers like IDW probably are exclusive to Diamond. It's an interesting time.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure, you know, with the news with DC kind of basically leaving them, that probably spurred them into action to try and convince any of their other big clients not to do that. So,
well, there's also the news that they are not paying the publishers, at least, like, they're paying a portion, and then each month or each week they're paying like a portion of the remainder. It's not, like, financially, it's not looking good for Diamond. They are for a monopoly in this like billion-dollar business, they didn't seem to have much runway with their money.
Mm. Interesting. All right, and our last bit of comics news comes from Twitter and longtime Transformers comics writer James Roberts. So you may remember him from More Than Meets the Eye and Lost Light, the long-running series from IDW that just wrapped up last year, or 2 years ago now at this point. But yeah, so James Roberts broke into... before he was an official writer for Transformers Media, he wrote fanfic, and he actually published a huge fanfic as a novel, and it was Eugenesis, called Transformers Eugenesis. It was basically a storyline that followed in the Marvel UK comics continuity, so it basically took the entire Marvel UK comics continuity as its backstory, and then wrote an original story, kind of wrapping that up or tying into that. And this got him noticed by the Transformers fan community. A lot of people took notice of this book. And I think even in the early days of IDW, Nick Roche snuck a reference to it into Maximum Dinobots, that the miniseries that he did art on. Snuck a Eugenesis, like someone had the book in their bookshelf in a panel of Maximum Dinobots. So this got him noticed by fans, and then also through his friendship with Nick Roche that got him an in into IDW, and then the rest is history. So this is kind of a seminal work. A lot of some of the characters that made it into More Than Meets the Eye and Lost Light show up in Eugenesis. So in particular, Rung, the psychiatrist, he is the character first appears in Eugenesis. So, there's some interest from the fan community. It is available online for free. You can probably just Google it and download it. But the physical copy, there's only been, I think he produced like 200 or so for people who wanted a physical copy back in the day.
150.
Oh, well, there you go. So not a lot. There aren't a lot out in the wild. So this is very hard to find. So what he's doing is auctioning off one of his copies. He started the bidding at $100. The auction ended April 23rd, so before this podcast goes up, it's already over. But at the time we're recording this, it's only been up for a couple of days, and starting at $100, it's already up to $600. So by the time this show goes up, I don't know what it'll be, but it'll be a lot. And the money is being donated to charity, the Book Industry Charitable Foundation. And the winner just donates the money directly to them, and then Roberts will ship the book to you. So I did, I tried to bid on this, but things quickly escalated, and I was not able to hang in there. So
is there even too rich for your doctor money?
Yeah, I mean, I can't spend that much on the. I mean, it's something I'd like to have, but I can't spend more than Unicron on this. I already bought Unicron.
Watch, you're going to be surprised, and like it's going to be won by your wife as a surprise for you. Because that would just be something like she would do.
That would be awesome. I don't think at these prices, I don't know. I would be very surprised. I would be happy, but I'd be very surprised.
Yeah. But hey, the people listening to this right now already know who won.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it's me, something crazy happened. So I'm guessing it's not me, because I'm going to predict this might end up at over $1,000. But we'll see. I don't know. But yeah, so it's just interesting. And yeah, I mean, it's for a good cause. So that's cool. I'm just, I didn't think people were, it was that sought after it is really a cool, interesting part of kind of non-official Transformers history. So we'll see. Congratulations to the winner. We also have an auction from Casey Collar. He's auctioning two comics and a sketch cover for charity.
Just a sketch.
Oh, just a sketch. Okay. Oh, and an Megatron original 8x10 inch original art. And All Hail Megatron. Ah, All Hail Megatron number 1, the Killing Joke variant. And All Hail Megatron number 12, the Megatron No More variant. So those are two classic covers from All Hail Megatron. Killing Joke, based, of course, on the Batman Killing Joke cover. And then All Hail the Megatron No More, based on Spider-Man No More cover. So two classic covers. I did get the All Hail Megatron cover for $20 back in the day. Thank you, Marion. But yeah, this is also going to the same charity. What is the bidding up to for this one?
Right now it looks like $380.
So this one ended even earlier than Robert's one. So
yeah, it ends on Monday.
Yep.
Or ended on Monday, the 20th.
Heavy.
Time travel is hard. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I think it's cool that artists and writers are putting up stuff for auction in these times to help,
mm-hmm.
you know, everyone in this, the whole pandemic situation. A lot of people are hurting, so this is a good cause. All right, so let's move on to our comic review. And this week, we do not have any new IDW comics, unsurprisingly. So we decided to go back and do a classic review. Although it's not super classic. It's kind of, it is 20 years ago, but it's not G1. Or it kind of is G1. I don't know. You can decide. But this is Dreamwave. We're going back to Dreamwave. This was the first resurgence of Transformers comics since the original series ended in the early 90s. This was the first Transformers branded property to use Generation 1 as part of its title. So this was kind of a retroactive thing put on the original Transformers series, because back in the day, when Transformers first had its kind of first mini reboot in the early 90s, they called it Transformers Generation 2. And so that retroactively named the original Transformers Generation 1. And that was something that the fan community kind of took up and used regularly. But this was the first official media that called something Transformers Generation 1 to say, no, we're focusing on the original 80s property. We're not just doing a reimagination of Transformers. We're doing a going back to the beginning, back to the basics, and focusing on the original characters. So this is notable, and that's the first media to do that. So this week we're going to review issue 1 of the first miniseries of Dreamwave. So this is Transformers Generation 1. There's a 4-page preview that came out before that, so we're going to talk about that, and then issue 1. And I guess we will also talk about the whole Dreamwave. There's a larger story of Dreamwave. I don't think we'll go too in depth, but this was, I mean, it's interesting because 2002 Transformers, at least for, I think for most people, was, you know, it was still, there was new stuff happening for kids, like the Beast Machines was over, then Robots in Disguise, the Japanese cartoon had been imported over. And then they were gearing up for Transformers Armada. That was the first kind of really, I guess, big reboot of Transformers that, you know, focused on the going back to the basics of like vehicle-based Transformers, since it had been Beast Wars for the last few years. And so this was a big turning point for Transformers. And Transformers comics had not been really active for a long time, since the early 90s. And the company Dreamwave decided, you know, they were a small independent company, Pat Lee had done a lot of art, of fan art for Transformers. You know, a lot of his images were being shown, passed around the internet. I had one of his images as my computer desktop background for a long time. You know, it was really taking that anime style and applying it to the classic Transformers was something people really responded to. And, you know, through that artwork getting noticed, I think he got it published in Wizard magazine at one point, and I think that gave him the in to work with Hasbro and capture the license, convince Hasbro to let them use the license for Transformers comics again. And of course, Hasbro was interested in selling their new toys, so they had to have a Transformers Armada comic. But as part of that, they were also given the license to do quote unquote Generation One comics. And so they took advantage of this. And this also in the early 2000s, like the kids now who have grown up with the movie based Transformers, they're now coming into their disposable income and looking back at those masterpiece movie toys. In 2002, this was the time when all us kids who'd grown up with Transformers in the 80s were now adults, graduated college or in college and had some income and were looking to recapture their childhood. And Transformers comics definitely rode that wave of nostalgia all the way to the bank. So I think this kind of kicked off the nostalgia boom for comic series in general. I think this, we had a whole host of 80s properties getting new comics in the next few years, but Transformers really captured this idea and really, I mean, they outsold the big two in this first mini series. They sold over 100,000 copies of each of these comics, which is, these days those numbers are unheard of for any comics really. And in the early 2000s, it was still unusual, but yeah, I mean, Transformers comics beating Batman, beating Spider-Man, that's seems unfathomable, but they did it. So the quality of the work, I mean, I think we'll have a discussion about that, but there's no denying that they captured lightning in a bottle with the nostalgia craze in the early 2000s. And we'll talk about other stuff that happened after that. So Pat Lee is a controversial figure. Some of the work he did, it's not necessarily clear he actually did it. And he also had a habit of not paying artists and writers for their work and mismanaged the money in Dreamwave. And that eventually caused Dreamwave to implode. So that's the sad kind of end story. But at the time the first comics were published, no one really knew about that. But definitely in the beginning, it seemed like this was a bright new future for Transformers comics. So, all right. Do you guys have any thoughts about, I mean, I don't know, were you guys collecting comics at the time when these came out? Or is this something that you kind of picked up later on?
It kind of got me back because I was like out of comics for financial reasons because I was a college student. And then around this time, I was getting a job, like you said. It was like about that time. And that was just kind of when I was like getting some of the reissue figures that were coming out. And then the comics, it got me back into comics in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. My story is similar to Jeremy's. Actually, the first two issues, I think it was, I missed. I had no idea that it was happening. I stumbled into a comic store because I think I was waiting for a bus or something for college. I went into the store just to kind of dink around while I was waiting, and I was like, Transformers? In comic book form? All right, cool. So I picked one up. I ended up backtracking to get number one of this series. Ended up buying like the third print of it because one and two were sold out. And and then I think I got number two as a second print or something like that. But it was, Yeah, I don't never remember getting the preview that we're going to talk about, but I may have picked it up after the fact. I think I've probably got it now. But yeah, after that, I had set up a pull list with the comic book store that I stumbled into. Turned out being a really shitty store that I ended up leaving after the second miniseries ended. But yeah, I went with them for a while, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to get these Transformers comics if they're coming out. Yeah.
Cool.
One thing I wanted to mention, because I probably will forget when we're done here, is what I found out when I was reading them is these comics were actually produced and printed in Canada, which was kind of cool for me. I was, you know, being a Transformers fan and being able to read in the book that, hey, these things were being, you know, written by people living in Canada and being produced. The company was in Canada. Dreamwave Productions was in Canada, just down the 401 from me in Markham. And, you know, the printing process was being done in Canada as well. I was like, this is a Transformers comic that's in Canada? What the hell? You know, where is this being done? I want to be there. Let me go there. And I never ended up doing it, but it was I was pretty stoked that it was all happening in my country. So, yeah, you know, fast forward a few years and I was very, very disappointed in these people.
Well, just Pat Lee. Right. And yeah. I guess just Pat Lee and Roger Lee.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, let's talk about the actual issue and then we'll give our thoughts. All right. So this is Transformers Generation 1, Volume 1. The preview, which I'm calling Issue 0, and then Issue 1. So this is written by Chris Saraceni, pencils by Pat Lee, inks by Rob Armstrong, backgrounds by Edwin Garcia, colors by The Real T, graphic design Paul Villafuerte, letters by Dreamer Design, and prepress by Kello Graphics. So, issue zero is just a 4-page preview, but it has a little little story that leads into the first issue. So, somewhere in the Arctic, the mysterious man known only as Lazarus leads a potential investor through the frozen wasteland on foot, promising it will be worth his while. The investor is not happy to be subjected to these harsh conditions and complains loudly with a bad sports metaphor. Lazarus ignores his complaints as they continue on through the snow. Finally, the investor is fed up with his shabby treatment and tries to grab Lazarus's arm in protest to get his attention. Lazarus reacts violently, twisting the man's arm and shoving him face first into the snow. The man decides to stop complaining. After Lazarus lets him up, he continues to follow behind meekly. Perhaps as an apology for the rough treatment of his guest, Lazarus decides to provide a bit more explanation about what he's offering. He tells a story about a race of mighty gladiators who fell to Earth long ago. Their strength, speed, and ability to fly were eclipsed by their most powerful ability of all. They could transform. The man still doesn't understand what Lazarus is talking about, but they finally approach their destination. Lazarus's team is digging in the ice, and they found something big. As they reach the dig site, Lazarus presents his prize, the deactivated body of a Transformer, the Decepticon Soundwave, buried in the ice. The investor needs no more convincing and is ready to cut a check right there. And that was the tease that Transformers were coming back in a big way. And, you know, sets up the mystery of who is this Lazarus? Why is Soundwave stuck in the ice? What happened? Where did the Transformers go? Why is he dead? And we'd get answers later on, but not in the first issue. At least not the full story in the first issue. So that takes us to issue one. I guess we can talk about the covers. I did get the first printing. So, the first, you know, when they first came out, there were three covers, the foil cover, the Autobot cover and the Decepticon cover. I showed them off in trips to the store this week. So you can check that out in Transformers 378. And since there were a second and third printing, they got different covers in the second and third printing. The second printing is Optimus Prime with Bumblebee in car mode standing, you know, right next to him. The third printing is Omega Supreme and fighting against the Decepticons. And then we have a retailer incentive cover with Superion and Devastator. So the Autobot and Decepticon covers are by Pat Lee. The foil cover is by James Reyes. The second printing cover and third printing covers are both by Pat Lee. And the incentive cover is by Pat Lee with the main characters, but then the backgrounds are credited to James Reyes. So, Daryl, which of these covers is your favorite?
In recent years, I've been able to pick up the Chromium one just because it's Chromium and it's awesome. And I do still have my Omega Supreme third printing. But I think probably the Devastator Superion one is probably the coolest one that I don't have. And I probably would still buy it if I found it. It's a cool looking image.
Cool. Jeremy, what about you?
I never got the Chromium one, but I really like that image with the, like, especially the number of bots in there. And I've always, like, even like around this time is when I was introduced to James Reyes's art, and I still love his art. You know, he's come so far from this to, you know, you see the things he does now with like all the Star Wars characters from every movie in one image. And, you know, just to see what he was able to do, even at this early stage of his career, I think it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of the overall Dreamwave style of kind of the more rounded features, but this is still a good image. I love it.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it stands out because since it's James Reyes and he's not, I think one of the criticisms of the Dreamwave art is that they all had to kind of follow the Pat Lee house style.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the James Reyes cover breaks away from that a little bit compared to the other ones. And I think I agree with you, Jeremy, that I think that covers my pick as well. In particular, just looking at the Autobot cover, I mean, one of the criticisms is that if you look at Optimus Prime in the perspective, it's like it's Rob Liefeld levels of not understanding perspective in terms of like where the arms and legs are and their proportions and placement to the body and where Optimus Prime's head is. Like you can if you Google this image and there are analyses where you can show like how is his head connected to his body given the, you know, where his arm is there, and it's very it's just you know, despite the fact that I think it's still cool and pretty, but it does play fast and loose with the perspective there.
Yeah, I will say I did get the one with Megatron and all the Decepticons. This was one of the first variant comics I ever got. Was I think it was at BotCon 2004. I picked up Australian versions of these, like it was three issues that had two comics in each issue, and issue one had that Megatron cover on it. So if I can dig it up, I'll show it off next week.
Cool. All right, well, let's talk about the story. So early in the morning in a jungle in South America, two thugs are guarding a rebel campsite. Patrol at 3:42 in the morning is usually pretty uneventful, and these guys are bored. But their boredom is interrupted when a giant metal monster somehow silently catches them by surprise. The monster crushes the first guard in its giant metal hand and then stomps on the other one with a giant metal foot. But the monster is just getting started as an explosion incinerates the rest of the camp. Far away in Cleveland, Ohio, that morning, Spike Witwicky is getting ready for work. His son Daniel stops him before he leaves to make sure he doesn't forget his hard hat. Spike playfully rubs his head as he tells his son to get ready for school. But Spike won't make it to work today, As he prepares to leave, there are two visitors at his door. General Hallow, head of the DWT, Developing War Technology Department at the Pentagon, has come to collect Spike for a very important mission. Spike hesitates, but the general explains that his presence is required, not requested. Further north, in the Northwest Territories of Canada, in the Arctic Circle, the mysterious Lazarus drives a potential customer in an army jeep to an undisclosed location. The customer has to wear a bag over his head to maintain the secrecy of the location. Lazarus is offering the next evolution in warfare to the highest bidder, including terrorists and dictators around the world. This customer is one of those unsavory individuals. As they drive on, the customer expresses skepticism about Lazarus's product. Lazarus promises he won't be disappointed. They arrive at a checkpoint, but they have to leave their vehicle behind to go the rest of the way on foot. Had the customer been able to, he would have been astonished to see the jeep transform into a humanoid figure and stand guard. As they finally reach their destination, Lazarus points out that his new customer, Bishop, has been fighting a losing battle in his fight for freedom. The reason, according to Lazarus, is his soldiers are obsolete. What if his troops didn't just hold weapons, but could become weapons themselves? Bishop has no idea what Lazarus is talking about, but when the bag is removed from his head, he finally understands. Back at the Pentagon, Spike waits in a hallway for his meeting with the general's team. While he's waiting, he's accosted by a creepy old janitor who tells him there's more than meets the eye around here. But Spike doesn't get to inquire further as General Hallow's assistant shoos the old man away while simultaneously bringing Spike into the DWT command center. General Hallow finally explains why they've brought Spike here. 3 years ago, after the Autobots united with the governments of Earth to finally defeat the Decepticons, the Ark II left Earth, taking the Autobots and their Decepticon prisoners back to Cybertron, along with a few human explorers. But they never made it. Due to some unknown cause, the ship exploded in orbit, killing everyone on board. That included Spike's father, Sparkplug. But apparently the Transformers were not obliterated, and Megatron has resurfaced. They have satellite footage of Megatron attacking a rebel camp in South America. Back in Lazarus's base, he presents one of his new products to the potential buyer. Lazarus's team has complete control of Megatron and several other Transformers, and they will carry out their commands efficiently and without hesitation. Lazarus demonstrates by ordering Megatron to move his arms. But for some reason, Megatron doesn't comply when Lazarus orders him to kneel before him. Lazarus writes it off as just a simple glitch and takes Bishop on a tour of the other bots they have for sale. But he doesn't notice when Megatron's eyes glow with fury. In the U.S., General Hallow takes Spike to a secret government facility to explain why they need him. With the return of Megatron, they needed a Transformer of their own to balance the scales. Spike is incredulous. They found one of the Transformers? Which one? As they enter the hangar, Spike sees the unconscious form of Optimus Prime. To be continued. And that was the mind-blowing first issue of Transformers Generation 1. So, there's a lot of complicated feelings about Dreamwave. I mean, I'll try to separate my thoughts now from my thoughts back then. I mean, I was, as someone who was starved for Transformers content and Transformers comics in the early 2000s, this was just a welcome return to Transformers. Having just anything focused on Transformers and trying to update it and take the story a little bit further than what we got in the cartoon back in the 80s. I mean, this was still, it's 2002. We're still, having the kind of the 90s. Edge, super edgy comics, that's still, in the back of our minds going forward. The art is, of course, it's very, I would say, anime-esque in terms of, taking that anime style and applying it to Transformers. It was, it was a reason to get hyped for new Transformers stories. It was also, this is not a reboot. This was continuing the 80s stories. Like, you get a hint, and they have this little newspaper article clipping that's a little bit of backstory where it's, you know, it's clearly the Transformers from the 80s. They crashed, you know, into Mount St. Hilary in 4 million years ago, woke up in the 80s, and then started their war again. All that stuff is backstory for this new story, but it's set in the modern day. It's set in 2002. So at the time, you know, there was a lot of speculation. Well, is this, you know, are these stories going to lead up to the movie? Because, you know, the movie happened in 2005, right? So we could very easily have our stories lead into that. You know, these new stories, that's only 3 years away. So I think, you know, and the art was, you know, the art was really the just the quality of the paper, the quality of the artwork was, you know, leaps and bounds above what we got with Marvel. You know, it's kind of prestige comics, I guess you could say, is, you know, looking high quality. So yeah, I mean, I was hyped like everyone else for, you know, I think a lot of Transformers fans were hyped for Transformers comics, you know, back in the day. Kind of taking a look at it now, there are just significant problems. I mean, we mentioned in the intro a lot of the facial expressions, they're all the same. That dull surprise, that's a meme that came out of Pat Lee's artwork, and it's really on, like, if you just look on display here, look through the book, every human character's face is kind of the same expression, and it's a little bit off-putting. But I mean, the other part is there's not a lot of Transformers in this first Transformers comic. I mean, I think having a slow start, I think we can forgive that. I mean, definitely the IDW series also did that, where you start off, you ease into the Transformers concept very slowly. But you know, this, I think, and this will be a lar- this maybe is a larger discussion for the, how the series ended up. I think the potential here in the first issue was very promising, but I think things went off the rails in later issues, but you know, I don't hold that against this first issue. But so yeah, I mean, I was really excited for this and looking forward to this. But you know, looking at it now is 20 years later, or 20 or 18 years later from I can't untangle my eventual disappointment with the series. And then, I mean, just the first series, I think it was didn't end on a positive note, but later Dreamwave series, I think, got better over time. But then of course the company imploded and we didn't get to see anything of where it ended up. But yeah, so I got a lot of complicated feelings is what I'm trying to say. So I'll let someone else talk. Daryl, what did you think?
The art is, I'm trying to think about how I felt back then when I was reading it, and the art was okay. I think at the time I was similarly to you, I was really happy to be getting something that was Transformers related. I can remember reading this first issue, and when you're on the page, I think it's page 2 or whatever, yeah, so page 2, and you see the hand kind of coming out of the forest, grabs the guy and takes him away, and then the foot comes down and squashes him. You're like, okay, you know, that's a Transformer's foot, that's a Transformer's hand, okay, cool. Then you go through some dialogue, blah, blah, blah. And then you see somebody driving a Jeep and you're like, that's Hound. That's got to be Hound. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the next page is more driving. And then the next page, they get out and Hound transforms, but it doesn't show his face. You're like, cool. You know, you're getting it's a little bit of excitement. You're like, okay, they're getting into it. Slowly, they're building the characters of, you know, the human characters of the world, and this is more for Transformers fans. They know that who know the Transformers characters. You don't need to know the Transformers characters to get this. You need to know who the humans are that they're dealing with. So the Transformers are there. They got, they're in the world. They're just kind of showing you how they're interacting right now with it. So they're building that. And then they kind of reveal that somebody's, you know, being presented to a Transformer. And then obviously you get the reveal of Megatron later on and Optimus Prime at the very, very end. And you're like, okay, cool. Here we go. We got some big names and you know, we're starting to roll here. But yeah, it is first issue one is a slow start. The preview itself, you get Soundwave and that's it, right? It's just, and he's buried in the ice. I give them the, you know, the build up for this because it was for me at 2002, this was exciting for me to kind of read through it. I was into the slow burn getting into the first series because I was really like you desperate for some new content. I didn't know how desperate I was, but I was really excited to be getting something new. So as I read through it, I was like, okay, there's somebody. Oh, Megatron, Optimus. All right, cool. All right, now we're rolling. And then, you know, and for me personally, I had bought issues 1, 2, and 3 at the same time. So I'm like, let's go, issue 2, let's go. And, you know, I just kept rolling with it. For me, it was a pretty good first start. I personally liked it quite a bit. The art, it doesn't hold up. For 2002, it was good enough for me because I was just kind of getting back into comics myself, and I was just happy to be getting anything. Looking back on it now, it definitely doesn't hold up when you've got the likes of Alex Milne, Nick Roach, Sarah Peter DeRocher, Guido Guidi, Andrew Griffith. The list can go on and on of just these quality Transformers artists that we have working in the business right now. And you're looking at what Dreamwave was putting out at the time. It's just too much. Even the Optimus on the very last panel, like how long is his neck? Right. I mean, that neck is a problem in the entire
issue,
right? Like yeah. Insane. The neck on this guy at the time. So yeah. It did the trick at the time and I was fine with it, right? I was a naive, early 20s and just getting back into comics for, you know, my adult comic reading life. Kids' comic reading life was done and I was finished with it. I was just getting back into being a collector for an adult.
Cool. And Jeremy, what were your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to have to also separate myself now from myself in my early 20s because, you know, we were coming off of, we had Beast Wars, Beast Machines, and then like the year before this, we had the RID 2001, which was like basically like the first real reboot, but we haven't really had G1 Transformers stories for a long time at this point. So this was just like kind of, The first punch of that 80s nostalgia that was gonna just take over for a while. And I just remember seeing this and just going nuts. And see, around this time, you know, I was really active in the message boards and stuff. And just, I remember seeing the images and just going insane about, like, we had never seen art like this for the, you know, in the comics. It's completely modern looking at the time. And now rereading this, I'm looking through and like you mentioned the neck on Optimus on that last panel. I'm looking at the necks of the humans and like particularly there's one with Spike where it's like, how is that neck even holding up his head? It's so long. It's just like it's horrible. And yeah. Then you have, and this is going to be a continuation with the next issue, the Arctic scenes. One, you're riding in a Jeep with no roof. And you're not wearing any headgear at all. And, you know, I'm relatively new to living in areas that get snow, like maybe like 10 years worth of my life. I've lived in areas that get snow, maybe 15. I don't know. But regardless, I know this, they're going to get frostbite within minutes. That's so dumb. I don't know. It was hard for me to get past that in my rereading now. I didn't even notice it then because I was living in the southern U.S. and I didn't know what snow was. But you would think that people living in Canada might know when they're writing and drawing.
Well, that's why we didn't put it in, because we don't need a hat when we're riding in a Jeep in snow.
But I mean, the overall story, you know, I enjoyed the intrigue and linking it with the cartoon. Facial expressions were always an issue. The robots never really looked menacing, but I like the whole mind control plot that they have here. And then, yeah, seeing the Optimus at the end, that was just like such a big surprise at the time. I think the thing I really enjoyed out of the entire book was that last page with the newspaper article, where you're just getting all of this background just, you know, in text.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that probably stoked my excitement for the series more than anything, because you're like, oh, wow, this is all the stuff that has happened between the cartoon and this comic. You know, and then, you know, such high expectations for this book and for the series and everything. Yeah, it definitely has its issues, but it's a product of its time. But I don't know. It's hard to get past the art, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah, and I do give it points, though, for also, I mean, the other thing about bringing it in, you know, saying we're making this for adults who mm-hmm. want the Transformers to be updated. Like, you start off with a Transformer murdering two people and, like, yeah. you know, you see blood spatter and everything, so that's definitely the signal, like, this is going to be a more adult-focused story, like, you know. And, yeah, giant robots would actually kill people. It's not just, you know,
yeah,
it's not like your Saturday morning cartoon.
Megatron would definitely step on a human. Yeah. I mean, he probably wouldn't even necessarily do it on purpose. He's not caring that there was, you know, like you would step on an ant. You don't care.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and so we also, Yoshi expressed he wanted to be in on this, unfortunately couldn't make it, but he did record his thoughts on this first issue, although he recorded a lot of thoughts, so we kind of pared it down a little bit, just because to fit into the constraints of the show. So maybe we'll put the full thing up as a bonus or something, but let's hear what Yoshi has to say about Transformers Generation 1, number 1.
The assignment was to read issue 0 and issue 1, which I've done. And the memories came flooding back, and they came flooding back hard. I was flipping through this book, guys. Like, I couldn't read it fast enough. And I stopped myself, and I slowed myself, and I would read a page, like, wicked quick, and then I'd read it slowly, and I really enjoyed diving back into this, just because this, for me, was so personal. And no wonder issue 1 sold like crazy. The timing couldn't have been better. I mean, nostalgia, kids from the 80s having their own money, and a book that is a beautiful mystery, a beautiful mystery. And it's hard not to look at it like Batman or Superman, or whether it's the comics or the movies. Like, they have to reboot these franchises. They have to massage, adjust, and change the backstory a little bit. And they also don't want to repeat too much of everything everybody knows and make it new and feel fresh. And for this first issue, or issue 0 and issue 1, they're both just such good mysteries that no wonder people couldn't wait to get their hands on it. No wonder it was selling like crazy, especially at, I mean, the nostalgia factor is going to get people like me to buy this shit, whatever it comes in whatever form. But once word got out about the story, especially after these first two issues, no wonder they had trouble keeping it on the shelves. And you know, an applaud goes out to the writer and to the artist here, Pat Lee, and they nailed this. This first issue You know, I say all this stuff, and in the back of my head, I can hear some sort of correction coming from Charles. So feel free to pause now, Charles, and correct me so I can look like a perfect dumbass for the rest of this recording. But, okay, so yeah, it's a great mystery and a beautiful tease. Issue zero, what the hell is going on here? And then, boom, at the last page, Soundwave. Like, man, if I wasn't liking the story or I wasn't liking the art, which I don't understand how any warm-blooded human being couldn't, that image of Soundwave lying in the snow, that would get you. I mean, this isn't a tactical assault on our childhood in a beautiful way from the front of writing and art and nostalgia. Just damn. And then you get that in issue one. You know, you get what the hell's going on with Spike, and Daniel, and why the fuck are they in Ohio? Like, you don't piece that shit together until the fucking news clips at the end of the two-page news spread at the end of the comic book. Which was fun to read. Sad, but fun to read. But, you know, here you got this reboot taking place in the early 2000s. You've got the seriousness of a Batman comic book. You've got militaries involved, and they're acting like militaries. You've got, I don't know who the bad guys are or why they're who they are yet. I have to reread all of this and remember it. You know, you get the look at Hound. You know, just why is he being so? Everything about this is a mystery. Like, why is Hound being so complacent? Are these bad guys? Is that why is Hound under their control? You get in there and you get Megatron standing or sitting in a throne like chair where they're trying to sell you on the fact we have complete control, but that fucker won't kneel. He won't kneel. And then as they leave the room, you get that red flash like, okay, Megatron's still the asshole we know. Like, this is great. Like, but what's going on? Why is he playing dumb? Or is he playing dumb? You know, it's the questions and the mystery that made it really hard for me not to open up issue two before recording this, guys. And I really, really hope you all have the same feelings and have the same nostalgic pull that I do, because I'm looking forward to listening to this episode and hearing what you guys have to say. But then the book, issue one, this isn't our childhood comic book. You got Megatron killing people. Hand comes in the forest, squished. This is different. This is darker. You've got dark writing is what you have, juxtaposition with beautiful art. Honestly, I don't understand, and I don't remember all the Pat Lee drama that we've talked about on the show. I'm not focused on it. I know there's issues there. Regardless of where credit is due or what have you, the art is beautiful. It's the art and the story writing are having the same effect on me in these two issues that Yanagar's art had on me in Generation 2. Like, it's just beautiful art. The writing is beautiful. The art is beautiful. The nostalgia pull, like the mystery. Like, how can you not enjoy this first issue? How can you not read it and be like, I have to wait another month for issue two? Are you fucking kidding me? How can you not be that way? Ah, Charles, quit nagging in the back of my head. Please be on my side on this. Damn, this is so good. Ah, man, I hope when we do issue two, I can be on the show, because if not, you're going to get another one of these fucking pre-recorded spasmastic reports from me.
All right. Well, I think we disappointed Yoshi. But wow, very positive, high praise from Yoshi. So I think the nostalgia hit him right between the eyes there. So, but yeah, sorry we didn't quite share your enthusiasm. But I think that means if you come back on the show, we could have a good discussion. So,
I wonder if Yoshi's high.
It's like a double rainbow across the sky. So beautiful.
That guy wasn't high either, was he? He was just really excited.
He was really high, Charles. He was extremely high.
He shouldn't have posted that to YouTube.
No, he should have. He should have. And he did. And we're all better for it.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's interesting to look back. I mean, we're almost 20 years away from this. So it's just interesting to see how this shaped Transformers comics going forward. But yeah, I mean, I think we'll have more things to talk about later in the series. I mean, we might just go through the whole 6-issue run since we're not getting any new comics for a little while. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think this first issue, this is still kind of, we see the honeymoon. It's got a lot of potential. But, there's a little bit of things fall apart later on in the series, at least. That's how I feel looking back on it. And even at the time, I felt like the end of the series didn't really live up to the potential of the beginning. But
so I agree a little bit with Yoshi. It was exciting at the time. Looking back on it, I can't see the, you know, I can't agree with the amount of nostalgia glasses he's wearing. I don't see that, but at the time I was super hyped on this, man. It was really good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, looking back on it with you know with the stuff that we've been given, yeah, I see the issues. I see problems with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that is our review of Transformers Generation 1 number 1 from Dreamwave, and we will move on to media news.
All right, and in media news this week, it seems like this story just keeps getting copied and pasted every week. Transformers War for Cybertron and Rise of the Darkspark video games, their multiplayer servers are discontinued too. So it feels like we keep talking about the same thing, but it's Activision just shutting down more servers for different games. So previously, it was the War for Cybertron, Fall of Cybertron games. Now it's the Rise of the Dark Spark. So that's the one that everyone wants to forget. So if you were playing that, why? And now if you're still playing it, you're just doing the campaign. So congratulations. I do have that game, and I've never finished it. I just got tired of it. Yeah, so that's being shut down. So there you go. And the only other topic we have for media news this week is another Soundtrack Saturdays. This is another piece of music that is composed by Robert J. Walsh and Johnny Douglas, and it's part of the Hasbro Studios Presents 80s TV Classics, Music from the Transformers vinyl release. From 2018, and this is from the show. It's another piece of instrumental music. It's Decepticon type of music or bad guy music. You can take a listen to it there, and as soon as you hear it, you'll be able to place it from different parts of the G1 show. It's very distinctive, so take a listen. And that's it for media news.
All right, and we will finish up the show with feedback. And first up, we have a voicemail from Donatrion John 4X Levengood.
Hi, guys. John 4X Levengood here again. In the recent alt mode, you guys asked what our thoughts are on Transformers Cyberverse, and I wanted to throw my two cents in. Like a lot of people, at the very beginning, I kind of wasn't exactly sure, especially with the non-talking Bumblebee. That's always been kind of irksome to me, especially after the, you know, it feels like they kept going on with it. However, I'm glad they worked through that and got that knocked figured out. I really liked, like a lot of other people, I found that season two really picked up. I am personally enjoying their take on Grimlock. I really enjoy the more smart, cognitive Grimlock, kind of almost refined, versus the comic relief Grimlock in T-Rex mode. I've gotten through the first four episodes on YouTube. I am personally waiting for them to come out on YouTube to watch them, because that's the way I am. anyhow, I'm really enjoying this series. I'm liking that death has a real meaning in this series, and that you know, and I'm really enjoying the takes and finding all sorts of fun with all the gags. Anyhow, that's all I have to say for now. Again, guys, keep up the good work. Bye.
John is correct. All his opinions are correct. I totally agree with John on Cyberverse. I felt the same way about Bumblebee. You know, I'm always not interested in Bumblebee not talking, so I'm glad that they did away with that after season one. And I just think the show is just a strong ensemble Transformers show and gives a lot of space to a lot of different characters. It takes some familiar characters in different directions. Grimlock in particular, that was a good mention. I think what they've done with Arcee this season, I think that's at the end that they gave us a little glimpse at the end of season two. And then in season three, she gets a little bit more spotlight. Windblade, I think, is a standout character. We get, you know, lots of other characters that, you know, you don't really get to see shine. New characters like Clobber and Dead End are really good. It's just a fun show.
I would argue one point, the Grimlock voice, I always thought would have been a better suited to Ratchet. For whatever reason, I cannot get behind the voice that they have on Ratchet. It's very whiny. And I was like, when they first showed Grimlock in season one, I'm like, that voice sounds much more like professory. And I get that, yes, they're going for a different, you know, take for robot mode as opposed to dinosaur mode, and it's a good juxtaposition between the two, but his voice for robot mode, I always figured could have been a Ratchet voice, and you could have picked something, or put the goofier voice from Ratchet to Grimlock. I don't know, it's just that voice that he uses for Grimlock, I just figured would have been a much better Ratchet voice.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general the voices are fine. I think it does. I mean, these are non-screen actor or voice like the voice actor, actors union guild voices. So I think in general, I mean, it's going to be slightly lower tier because these are not the top tier voice talent. But I think everyone for the most part did a good job. But yeah, I mean, I still have issues with Optimus Prime. I mean, back in season one, when it just happened once, we talked about Teletron. I mean, that continued throughout the whole series, and that was annoying. And the Quintessons, of course, that's another issue. I don't know why they keep pronouncing it Quintesson. But yeah, so those are minor nitpicks. I'll just get over myself. All right. And our last bit of feedback is part two of the email from Donatrion Will. So he asked us a question in the toy show about our favorite toy line. Now he asks about which non-IDW comic artists are your favorites. And again, he says all the best, stay safe and healthy.
I want to thank Will for spelling favorites correctly. It's with a U.
Get that U out of here. Yeah, we know. We know, Daryl. We know. You Canadians and you Brits with your U's, adding U's everywhere that don't have no business being there.
You lazy Americans. Can't put a U in there.
So non-IDW comic artists, I've talked about this on the show before, but for me, back in the 80s, Jeff Senior made a big impression on me.
He's worked for IDW.
Okay, but he was originally not an IDW artist.
Are we talking still just Transformers?
I think we're focusing on yes, this is still a Transformers podcast.
Well, I understand, so. But the number of artists...
I took it as really non-Transformers outside of the fandom.
I mean, you have Pat Lee. And, most everyone else of note has worked for IDW at some point.
So, I mean, I think maybe we could... Can I modify it slightly to pre-IDW? How about that?
How about just not drawing Transformers comic artists?
Yeah, because I didn't read the Marvel comics until after we started doing this podcast.
I mean, I think it's still... I mean, he would have said non-Transformers comics artists if he wanted non-Transformers.
Charles doesn't know any comic artists that don't draw Transformers.
Okay, fine.
Say your
names.
Eric
Larson. Eric Larson. I liked his Spider-Man art. Jeff Senior is my favorite Transformers comics artist from back in the 80s. Really like Jeff Senior. And Yoshi mentioned Derek Yaniger. I really like the G2 art and Derek Yaniger did. And Andrew Wildman, of course. Go. Give your non-Transformers comics artist. Go ahead, Daryl.
I've got a lot, actually. I'm a fan of art, comic art, so I have quite a few. I mean, I have, like, I'm a big Barry Windsor Smith fan right now. I'm on a bit of a kick of his. He did a lot of the early Conan the Barbarian stuff. Went on a hell of a run with the Wolverine Weapon X stuff in the Marvel Presents or Marvel Comics Presents. He's very talented. I don't even know if he's still working on comics anymore, but big fan of his. Adam Kubert and Andy Kubert, big fans of those guys as well. I came into them through X-Men, and they did some really, really good stuff that I'm still a big fan of. Classic stuff. Neil Adams is still, he's pretty awesome. I have a lot of his old stuff. He's really good. J. Scott Campbell, he's really good. He usually only does covers, which kind of suck because when he used to do books, like whole books, they were amazing. Yeah, man, there's so many. Mark Bagley on Spider-Man, Todd McFarlane. I liked Eric Larson. He did some good stuff, but Mark Bagley is who was drawing Spider-Man when I got into him. I think probably the biggest guy that I'm into right now that I didn't draw IDW at all is Jack Kirby. he's dead.
he died before IDW came into existence, probably.
I think so. But no, it's he's a big influence on a lot of artists, and I've been in awe of the stuff that he was putting out. I've been collecting a lot of the old 60s comics, and a lot of them are like plotted and co-written and arted by Jack Kirby. And I'm like, this is just one book. And he did four books that month. I'm like, how did he do this? Like, this guy was just a machine. And I'm impressed every time I pick up another book that I'm, you know, that he did. And, you know, they were all 20 page books, and they're just, it's great. He was the master. That's why they call him the king. So yeah. Jeremy.
Well, I was a non-IDW Transformers artist. I'll just say Matt Moylan. I've got a few sketches from him. As far as I know, he hasn't done any IDW work except for maybe a cover here and there. All right, that's it.
No Dan Jurgens from you?
No. Yeah, I'm kidding. Dan Jurgens is a big favorite. Like, I was, like, in high school when I was, like, really in my first big getting comics, like, regularly, I was reading his Superman run. Darwin Cook, who did the New Frontier series on DC, I like that retro kind of simplistic look that he came up with. Kind of IDW related. I mean, he did a few covers during the Dark Cybertron era, but Phil Jimenez is just, he does, like, in the vein of George Perez, who's also great. He seems to pack so many people into an image. It's just amazing. And then in the modern day, Patrick Gleason, his stuff on Superman was really good. Before Bendis came, he did the Rebirth Superman series with Peter Tomasi, and I adore that series. So pretty much it I can think of right now.
A lot of great artists. A lot of great artists out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Will, let us know what your favorite artists are. And if, you know, what do you think of some of our picks here? And that will do it for this episode of Transmissions Alt Mode. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transmissions. But just because this episode is over doesn't mean the Transformers fun has to stop. Join us and other Transformers fans on our Discord chat server by visiting transmissionspodcast.com/discord. If you would like to learn more about how you could support the Transmissions Podcast, just visit transmissionspodcast.com/support. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you again next week.